Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the iCollege at the National Defense University. So, Bob, in some quarters, there's a perception that government lags behind the private sector in innovation. First, do you think this perception is accurate? And second, how do you think the government can enhance its position to become a leader and driver of innovation?
Well, as I said earlier, I think we have to get beyond the Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games is where we are now. And until that comes to an end, I think it's going to be difficult. Okay. Because what do you typically cut? You cut R&D and education. The two things that you probably need both. If a company cuts those areas, they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, take a look at any company that cuts R&D. Now, on a note, looking at companies, my perception of Apple, I think Apple's going to come back. I told you I study the stock market, and I look at companies, and you learn a lot from companies. And I can't understand, except for leadership, and you want to talk about leaders, and this is one thing I didn't mention, is Steve Jobs when he led Apple, okay? He was a great marketer, okay? That's what they've lost, losing him. Plus, they also lost the perfectionist that could sell the product. They still have smart scientists and everybody, engineers, putting stuff together. So I think they'll come out with products, and I think they'll come back. I mean, they have a PE of like 9 or 10 now. So when you start to get into it, they haven't cut their R&D is the point that I'm trying to make. But government has. DARPA's scaled back. They still do some stuff. But there used to be stuff that was spun off from NASA and other organizations. Now, do I think government's doing stuff? Yeah, because we have to. Mm-hmm. But I think where it's coming is in the people in the process.
Interesting.
I don't think it's coming in the technology area. Okay, the technology is coming from the private sector. Now, an interesting story. Where do I learn things and do things? Mm-hmm. I got invited to a meeting of Mark Andreessen and Chertoff and Alexander. And this was put on, I walked in and it was over at the museum, and this was about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. And it was a bunch of venture capitalists that were being funded by the Andreessen Corporation. And that was fascinating to me. There were all these guys there. They may not have had much money. They may have been multimillionaires, but they were starting small tech companies, which get bought out by your Ciscos and your Apples and your Googles when they get going. But they were looking for funding, and that's what this corporation does. But listening to them talk, and I ran into some of the people you would guess. I ran into Mark Weatherford there. Okay, I ran into Vivek Kundra there, who works for Salesforce.com. But you ask me where I get ideas, I get ideas at places like that. I go out to places like that. I think that's where your ideas are going to come from. But the question is, we government people have to go out and find them. One time I heard somebody say, and I can't remember who, that they had 30 vendors a week that wanted to come in and see them. Well, we don't have time for that. You know, you just can't keep hearing vendors. And the problem is, if you really don't know the environment, how do you know what technology to pick? Mm-hmm. This is the problem with other countries, with the U.S. A lot of times, the U.S. is guilty too. We'll buy a technology, but we really don't. We think we know what it's for. We haven't got the requirements right. We don't have the schedule right, whatever. And we get what we ask for, but we didn't ask for the right thing. You know, so it's interesting. But I think the innovation from the government has got to come from the cost cutting, and it's going to be people and processes. It's going to be cultural changes versus technology innovations. Mm-hmm.
As a result of, say, the budget austerity and what have you, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, as a result of that, clearly.
So you stay current and in touch with global technology pulse or trends by doing what you just suggested, by going to these events and... is there other ways that
well,
you can
going
connect?
To going to events, reading. I find it fascinating looking at stocks. Like I listen to Cramer on TV at night and Mad Money, and then I go in on the internet and I find something, and it's kind of like wandering around the candy store or something. You start wandering through sites and then you start reading. Like okay, and then you find a company that sounds interesting, and you say, "What business are they in? What are they trying to do?" And then you put four or five of these things together, it's kind of like I stumbled onto LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I started using it. And man, I was getting in touch with people that I wanted to get in touch with, but I couldn't get through to. Steve Cooper, I'd lost touch with. I told you Steve was a good friend, but I'd been sending him emails. I didn't know he'd switched jobs, but all of a sudden it comes up on LinkedIn. Sent him a LinkedIn connection. Within 24 hours, within 6 hours, I had him. So you start looking at these technologies and you say, wow. And then if you start seeing a stock move, you start saying, hey, there's other people that are interested in this. So you start looking at it, and it kind of drives you to explore things. I think that's incredibly important. And then I think you need to think big, like, okay, where do I want to go? Like right now, I say, I want to be international, but I can't go international. How can I maintain these contacts? So you start looking for technologies and ways, you know, that you can do this. So you have to figure out new ways to do things.
Well, that's a great transition into the future, finding new ways of doing things. So I was wondering, what are some of the major opportunities and perhaps challenges you at the iCollege will face over the upcoming years? And how do you envision your organization transforming to meet those challenges and seize opportunities?
Well, I would say we've gone through the biggest transformation now. Okay. We've had people retire. We've had people move on. I have to admit, I had a meeting about 12 months ago, could have been 18 months ago, and I a lot of people would say it was bad leadership, but I called people in and I said, look, here's what the environment looks like to me. I said, if you have another job opportunity you think is better, I would take it. I wasn't trying to drive people out, but I was trying to be honest. And that was my honest assessment. And I still feel that way. I think the next couple years, things are going to get worse before they get better. I mean, I'm following what Secretary Hagel's saying. I'm following what the president of the National Defense University. We just have to get through it. We have to figure out, and we just have to keep positioning ourselves and sort out how to do it. Okay? So that's number one. Two, I think that we are so unique and we're an international force, I have to keep these relationships alive any way I can. Okay, so I'm constantly looking for ways. Calling people in, calling them on the phone, sending emails, finding out when they might be in this country, finding if we do have limited money, who do I send to a place and how can we get the very most out of this place? If somebody's going somewhere, I'm probably going to have them do four or five things rather than one thing. But I think the international scope, I think if we are not on top of things in international, you might as well close the doors. I honestly feel that way. That's what I would say. If somebody called me in and said, okay, we have to eliminate all your relationships in this and you hunker down and this is the one thing you do in life, I'd say it violates number one principle, which was be a niche organization and be the best in the world in doing it. If you can't do that, mm-hmm. close the doors, mm-hmm. okay? We can do it, but you got to help us, okay? So I'm looking for help. Now, another way to do that, we used to have a saying, OPM, other people's money, okay? There are pockets of money that want to get things done. So how can you partner with those people or those organizations or whatever the purpose is that controls that money and get involved with it? Maybe you have to modify what you're doing a little bit. Maybe you have to do a few things different. You can't totally compromise what you're doing, but like anything else, you may have to compromise something, you know, to get from here to there, you know. And if you believe enough in what you're doing, you will survive the Hunger Games and come out on the other end. What you have to be careful of is you don't compromise everything and you come out
half of what you were before.
Yeah, because that doesn't work. That's not worthwhile.
You're a hollow shell at that point.
Exactly, and you don't want to be in that position.
As once again, I mean, I always love having you in. It's chock full with great anecdotes. And as you reflect on your career in public service and education, what advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in either?
One, I think in many ways the public sector is harder than the private sector. the government is not a take risk, be a bold organization. I mean, historically, it's not. It's a conservative organization. I've always been fortunate. I've had bosses that have had my back. Okay, I've done some things and reached out in areas that would make other people nervous. I mean, I'm not talking illegal things or anything like that, but I'm talking about things that
pushing the envelope.
That's what I've been told to do by my past bosses. I mean, Admiral Rondo, Admiral Gaffney, Mike Nunn, Fran Wilson, way back to Brad Hosmer, Dick Lawrence. I mean, Jack Baldwin. I've worked for some outstanding presidents. I've worked for 12 presidents at NDU, and they've all supported me. I guess that says something that I survived. Either I compromised my principles or something. But what I would say to people is be passionate. Be passionate about what you do. You know, be bold and try things. I mean, you got to live with yourself at the end of the day. And it's kind of like now I had a meeting on some stuff and I said, hell, let's go ahead and try this thing. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I don't want to sit back and say, I wish I would have, you know. So one, be passionate. Keep a balance in your life. I mean, coaching and hiking, I can get away from business and worries. In fact, my one biggest worry, I coached soccer for 30 years. I just quit a year and a half, 2 years ago. And my wife said, oh, no. And my faculty said, oh, no. We need you thinking about other things. We don't want you thinking about the job 24/7. Build relationships and nurture those relationships. I mean, I have relationships now. John Grimes, Alan Balutis, you know, Cisco, Dave Wintergreen. I mean, these go back for years. And they're solid through good times and bad times. And we may disagree on things, but you know you got a friend there who has your back and your best interest at mine. So you build those relationships. There are a lot of opportunities. There really are. There are challenges, but you got to take chances on those. You have to find them, analyze them, sort out which ones you're willing to take a chance on, and then just kind of do it. Mm-hmm. Your rewards are not monetary. I won't go into it, but I did a calculation of the lost money for me over the last 3 years. And looking ahead, you know, I'm getting toward I could consider retirement or something. You start looking at it and say, wow, the last 3 years have been really tough. But you can't do it for money. I don't think any of us are you know, trying to get rich this way. It's not going to happen. I'd advise people to put their money in thrift savings. I'll tell you what, that's the best deal going. Every cent you can get in there, throw it in there. And just do it. I mean, get out there, do it. Meet people. Stretch yourself. God, the most challenging times of my life, it's like coming in for these interviews with you. Sure. It may seem like it goes smooth. Yeah. I was very nervous today in preparing and thinking about this and everything because I had to review everything and kind of justify in my own mind what I'm doing and why.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy day and joining us today. But more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country and to the National Defense University.
Well, Michael, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to think through these things. You certainly challenged me. My staff looked at all the questions you sent over and they said, holy cow, what's he done? You know, he knows everything about you, everything you're into. You know, how'd he uncover this stuff? We didn't even know these things. I would just leave your listeners with one thought. The iCollege is a wonderful opportunity for the government. The interagency pays a minimal fee. DOD, no cost for military or civilians. You can't match the education anywhere. I would encourage you to do it in the times of hard monetary times. This is a good, cheap, quality education you can't get elsewhere.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the Information Resources Management College, or iCollege, at the National Defense University. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.